la Biblioteca Pública de Catskill nos gusta mucho tener programas del equipo de WGXC viniendo de la biblioteca desde el cuarto Carnegie. Para información en cómo utilizar el espacio para una reunión suya, llame por favor 518-943-4230.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Chocolate pigs are awesome.
I turned it down.
Only dogs can hear. Did you hear that?
No. Desmarchand, a proud supporter of WGXE, is a men's and women's boutique featuring creative and classic clothing, shoes, and accessories. Now presenting our fall collections from European and American designers. Desmarchand.com. DEMARCHIN.com on Warren Street in Hudson, New York.
Good afternoon. This is Robert Tomlinson, host of Purple House, a monthly forum for the arts on your creative community radio station, WGXC 90.7. Welcome. And my first guest today is the amazing Jen Dubois.
Well, thank you.
Hi, Jen.
Actually, that was what my dad used to call me when I was little.
Really?
The amazing Jenny.
What did you do to deserve that?
Everything. All the things.
I bet.
Yes. Well, I was the firstborn child, so of course I was the miracle.
Of course.
Could do no wrong. But I think it was just him being, you know, in awe of being a dad, kind of, and you know, he... Mm-hmm. You know, as though it was some sort of a product. You know, she walks, she talks, she does all this stuff. You know,
right.
Like a commercial on the radio.
But it is a sense of miraculousness that every parent feels, with no matter how many children they have. It's like it's the basic miracle of life unfolding in front of you.
Yes,
it's a great, great thing. And look at you now. So now let's say congratulations.
Thank you.
You are the new executive director for the community center in Catskill.
That is true.
It's so exciting. This is a new chapter in your life. But before we do you, let's also say thanks to Beth for her service to our community and wish her well for her new endeavors. I think she's going to Delaware, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, new adventure.
So
new
thank
state.
You, Beth, and good luck to you.
Absolutely.
And welcome, Jen.
Thank you.
Thanks. So you haven't sort of officially started, but you've been involved.
Right. I am I'm not in the building yet, if you will, but you know, have to do some things, tie some loose ends, etc.
Transition. So when will you be in the building?
Hopefully within the next week or so.
Okay,
I'll be starting officially.
Good. But you're starting to look at the programs, and you must be thinking, "Oh, I think I'll do this or do that, or I've got ideas."
And there's a lot going on. One of the things that I was able to do last week, there was a meet and greet for the market vendors. So one of the things that I, you know, wanted to make sure that I was on board for is the beginning of the farmers market, the Catskill Farmers Market,
which starts this Friday,
and it is from 4 to 7 p.m. at Dutchman's Landing Park, and it is alarming how many people are unaware of Dutchman's Landing Park.
We got to fix that because it's so beautiful out there.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's the perfect setting for a farmer's market, and it's so easy to find.
The parking is good.
The parking is great, and let's let people know if they want to find it, how they can find it. People coming over the bridge and coming back into Catskill from Columbia County side, if you make a left at the light, it will take you to a T.
So that's left on Spring Street.
So that's a left onto Spring Street. Follow it to the end of Spring. Take a right and head down the hill,
Bridge.
Which is Bridge Street.
Yes.
And you will find another traffic light, which is our Main Street. It's the intersection of Main. Take a left on Main. And that will take you right down toward the river. And the Dutchman's Landing Park, there are actually two beautiful parks down that way.
Mm-hmm.
The point is on the right at the far end, but just before that on the left-hand side is Dutchman's Landing Park. And it's just a really lovely place to go with your families. There is a beautiful playground there, outdoor workout equipment for anybody who's into fitness and things like that as well.
And if you're not into fitness, there's some great French fries at the Little Burger Stand.
Yeah, there's the Grill and Chill is down there, which is cool. You know, you can get burgers and fries and stuff like that, and the kids love that. But then some of our vendors will also have things that are not that, very much not that, vegan offerings and fresh grab-and-go type sandwiches and salads and things like that.
Just and there'll be music. I know last year. So let's say frame this conversation. So last year there was a shift. So it left from the downtown Main Street.
Yes.
Went down to the Dutchman's Landing as a first-time trial. How do you evaluate if it's successful or not? Is it the merchants who actually say, yeah, this is working, it's cool? Or
well, certain things, I mean, there is a lot of risk involved to be a vendor at something like that. And when you have, you know, your product, if your product is something that melts or wilts or has a little trouble in the hot sunshine on the pavement, maybe the street is not the place you want to be. So, you know, considering that and trying to get them that nice river breeze and some shade, the trees are beautiful there. So the vendors, they do have their tents, but there's also, you know, a very nice differential in the temperature and how things. I mean, this is a summer event, so it's an ongoing weekly event all summer.
Yeah,
so
it'll go through to the first week of October. Is that?
I believe right now the date. The end date, I think, is the 14th of September.
Okay.
And then because what they'll do is the following week. They're going to have the second annual, making this an annual event, the farm-to-table dinner. Then they will have that at the point the following week, so after the market closes. And they may do an extended. There's been a little buzz, a little talk of maybe a harvest market extension for when some of the fall things are really out.
Produce.
And, you know, yeah, we do have a lot of great fall foods that are you know, in season after that. So I think maybe if you stay tuned, you'll be able to find information about that.
But do you have any idea how many vendors there'll be? Do you know a number yet?
I think there are 16 booths 16 this
booths.
Year. Okay. And some of them, there's a wide variety.
Yeah.
They are definitely all kinds of different stuff. And it's just a nice date. And it's a nice, you know, evening thing to do, afternoon, evening. Let the kids play, do a little shopping, meandering. I do have a list of the vendors, and I think as of yet incomplete. But there are also, you know, in addition to the vendors, there is live music or entertainment. There are different things that will be happening. Rivertide Aikido is coming down, and there's, you know, there'll be puppet show and plantings. I know Michelle from Pistol Whip Design is going to do something with everybody with their planters and flowers. So that's going to be amazing. And of course, we are here in the Catskill Library, my former home. And
yes.
So our youth services librarian, Nora Burrows, she'll be coming down there. And it's every other week, I believe, which this Friday will be one of those. And she'll be there just to have, we have always had ongoing book sales in both Catskill and Pownville Branch Library. So there'll be books for buying, but then also I think they'll bring some things from the collection just for a little story hour type thing. We're planning to have a kid zone sort of under the gazebo area.
So this is very much geared towards family.
I mean, absolutely.
It's really inclusive of everybody, all ages, come down. I have to say, it is such a spectacular place just to be there and to get to buy fresh vegetables and see, you know, like we all do locally, what we like is to meet our pals and see what's going on and touch base for the weekend. And
yeah.
It's a great idea. I'm happy that it's continuing.
There really are a lot of opportunities for social. That's kind of what people want to, you know, make it. And that was the other motivation for moving it. Because when it's in a tight setting, people kind of tend to just breeze through as though it's an errand, and they just do their marketing and then they leave. And, you know, my friend Kim Bender actually runs the Coxsackie Farmers Market. She does a beautiful job. They have that on Wednesday evenings in Coxsackie at the Riverside Park. And, you know, I essentially just said to her, like, do you care if I just lift your model? You know, and I talked to them about it last year and told them this is where we really need to be. This was before I was even, you know, really involved.
So tell us what that means, lift your model. What is it you're going to borrow from her that wasn't there already?
That means, well, the setting of having it at the park. Mm. You know, so this is what they did last year. Move it down to the park. Have it be that it's a little bit more spread out. That it's not just one and done breezing through, because that also works out better for the vendors. If somebody is there and they have purchased bread, for example, and then they walk around for a little while, they may go over to someone else who's doing baked goods, and they might buy some chocolate, you know, eclairs or croissants or donuts or something mm-hmm. else, or cupcakes or something. You know, they'll kind of, as they stay and extend mm-hmm. their time, they'll say, well, maybe I'll get this too, or maybe mm-hmm. I'll get that too. So it's really, it works out well for the vendors, but it also just makes it a really nice place to hang out. It's mm-hmm. it's much more of a social thing.
Okay, so that's every Friday, starting this coming Friday, and we'll go through at least mid-September, and yes. it starts at 4 o'clock and goes till roughly 7 p.m.
4 to 7, so it's a great, you know, people can come down after work and just kind of get great. A few things. And they have the grills, and they have the picnic tables, so if you're, you know, buying things right there, you can actually just make a little, you know, make a little picnic out of it if you want
wonderful.
To.
Wonderful. So let's shift back. I know this is a tiny bit early in the conversation in terms of, you know, because you're not even in the building yet, really.
Right.
But you obviously have been interviewed about this job. You've been thinking a lot about the community center and its future in our community. Just off the top of your head, what do you think are some immediate challenges that you'll be facing?
I think, well, we, you know, really want people to be aware about what the center is doing and wants to do. Moving forward, I think awareness and support are tremendous, you know, goals.
Awareness meaning awareness of programs.
Awareness of programming and the space and what we do. I think a lot of people are under the misconception that it is strictly a youth center, and that's not the case. The kids absolutely in this community use that space and love it and love it. But it's for everyone. And that's sort of one of my goals, is to develop the picture of it as a whole community center, and, you know, make sure that all ages and stages and you know. Mm-hmm.
So when you were here at the library, you were very successful at bringing in seniors and expanding the kind of programs. Will you be able to bring some of that to the community center?
That's kind of what I would like to see happening. I was very excited. I was really fortunate to be... for the past half dozen years, I worked at the Catskill Public Library and was the program and outreach coordinator there mm-hmm. most recently. And, you know, we got, I mean, toward the end of my time there, we had, you know, a lot of seniors participating in things that I didn't necessarily think that they would do. And they vocalized that. You know, I had people say to me, I would never have left my house in January, in the evening in January, to come out and climb stairs to do a thing. It's like... you know, that they're really, thank you so much for doing this. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, really what makes it worthwhile. You know?
Cool.
Had a table full of seniors. We had a concert. We had started an annual concert series. And this year, my friend Mel Flannery came. We spoke here on the radio, right. Mel Flannery Truck and Company. They played a beautiful show. And I thought for sure the seniors would not be out at that. I mean, they would come, you know, they came to the Harpist and they came to the Irish folk band here at the library. But I thought, you know, it's much later, it's much louder. Now they're sitting there drinking beers and having a great old time.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So because you obviously are a practicing and serious musician, you're going to bring, I assume, some of that into the center in some way. What are your thoughts? I know this is all very preliminary, but right now, what are you thinking about?
I'm thinking about, you know, a lot of the same kinds of things that people really expressed appreciation for and love for here in the library. The concert series was a really great thing that we were able to do.
That was a monthly?
Was a monthly series. And, you know, I think the relationship with WGXC, the availability of the pop-up, I mean, that's all something that we should certainly continue to see develop. There's a lot of space and a lot of potential mm-hmm. for the use of the space. I do think people want to, you know, continue to have all kinds of things, workshops, like for all ages. There are classes that go on. Rec program is about to begin, which a lot of people know the center for that, and the recreation program is wonderful. And I'd like to see more things, you know, for the adults to do similarly.
Is there hope of a community kitchen?
There is hope of a community kitchen. We kind of spoke about that a little bit. I really think that there's a lot of love for the center in the nostalgia vein, and there's in comes Amy Rigby, speaking of library concerts and wonderfulness. We actually did an interview here too before the Herd concert.
That's right.
So people can be treated to that shortly. I see a guitar case. So yes, concerts, everything like that. We actually did some workshops. I had Molly Stinchfield taught a collage workshop. We did mm-hmm. photography. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, those are all things that people will want to see. I was distracted by by Amy's arrival.
I'm always distracted by Amy Rigby's arrival. I know. It's exciting. We're all looking forward to some live music in the studio, too. But we're thrilled to have you here, too.
Well, so thank you.
Let's focus on that.
Getting focused. There's the community kitchen. That's what you asked me about. I think a lot of people do have a really special place in their hearts for the center, whether they, you know, attended programming when they were younger or, you know, later in life, or whether they, some people met their partner there, or they have wonderful memories of working there as, you know, counselors or community volunteers. And I would really like to see some development of the space in terms of its use for, you know, things like mm-hmm. gatherings and celebrations, that people could actually use it mm-hmm. and, you know, be there.
So one of the major challenges might be how to use the space. What's the best way it serves the community?
How to expand your services? How to make sure that we can afford our big dreams and such.
Affording big dreams.
It's all wonderful to say I would like to put in an industrial kitchen, but you know, when an oven is $5,000, then you know that you are going to need some help. Uh-huh. And I'm hoping that people will.
I have a feeling right now there's someone at home going, "I could pay for that.
I
could make a donation of a community kitchen."
I think
to the community center. I got a good feeling about this.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. Well, it's really such an invaluable thing. I mean, we have a lot of kids, you know, my parents both worked, and I mean, we were very fortunate in what we had and what we were able to do, but I was, and my brother was, responsible for a lot of things. We had chores, we did things, and we, you know, mm-hmm. I had my sister, and
this is in Catskill, by the way.
This was in Coxsackie, where I grew up. Okay. So, but we would do, you know, starting dinner or doing something like that. I think a lot of our kids in the community would love to have the chance to help mm-hmm. their families in that way, learning how to cook, and not just the kids, but, you know, I have talked with some of my friends are in the hospitality industry. A lot of my friends are in the hospitality industry and are very willing to, you know, offer what they know. I mean, that's how we all learned things, you know, growing mm-hmm. up, and kind of just shadowing someone in the kitchen, mm-hmm. following, you know.
Well, there's an opportunity for mentorship and all of that, too.
Absolutely.
Which is really great.
Excuse me. Yeah. So I think that would be the kind of thing that I would like to see go in there if people would be willing to support it, and we could create a facility where there were workstations where several people could be cooking mm. at the same time or learning to do that. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of, you know, volunteerism as far as people who have the skills to teach those things.
And I happen to know from talking with Neva that the WGXC staff would be happy to volunteer tasting.
Oh, yes.
Anything you need tasted, because, you
well,
know,
good.
That's an
good.
Important part of a community kitchen is the taster.
Absolutely. Well, right? the other thing is, I think, you know, and here at the library, we've done, you know, drives of fine forgiveness for, you know, food pantry items mm-hmm, and things mm-hmm. like that. We do have local food pantries, and you know, it's a challenge to grow up cooking for, you know, on a budget for your family, and it's, we've been very fortunate mm-hmm. to have the offer of, you know, kind of teaching people how to work within those parameters, and being able to go to the market and get some of the fresh things and then pair them with some of the things that you have in your pantry and mm-hmm. then just kind of make something really beautiful is a nice thing. And it's great, you know, for kids who want to get jobs, young people who want to get jobs in that industry mm-hmm. to have this kind of training. But it would be a really wonderful resource in terms of having these kinds of gatherings and having the availability of a kitchen that could function as a catering kitchen if someone wanted to hire someone to come in and be their vendor, then the facility would be there and be able to be used in that way. So
cool.
It's a big undertaking, but I would like to.
I hear a theme in this too, which also perks my interest, which is that of collaboration.
Yes.
Seems like you're talking about really connecting in a big, big, thorough way with various aspects of the community to bring new programming, new use of space into being.
Yeah, I think that it's really. Lisa Jackson said this, you know, when I went back in, we
Lisa's a board member.
Yes.
Former
yes.
president of the board.
And, we spoke a few years ago when I was here about, the, you know, community partners that we have basically. And she remembered that and said something that I had said to her years ago, which was, you know, between the library and the community center and the senior center and the Maker Syndicate and all these wonderful places will some of the people will go to each one. And if we can collaborate together, we'll get everybody, you know, and that will be something that we make sure that, you know, there's a place for everyone and the community center should be a place that feels like that.
Wonderful. Okay, so we got 1 minute left.
1 minute.
How would you like to fill that minute? What do you want to say about the community center, your place in it, anything specific?
Well, I'd like to just remind people again that the Catskill Farmers Market is beginning this Friday evening from 4 to 7 at Dutchman's Landing Park. You can check, there are Facebook and you know, directions if you need a map or something like that. You can go and see in like the pages, and they'll follow, you know, the updates and things like that, and they'll give you all that stuff. And I don't know, maybe transitioning into music,
let's mention what you're up to.
Let everyone know that I'll be playing at the Crossroads Brewing Company Catskill Tap Room on Friday the 15th, I believe, is the Father's Day
weekend.
A week from Friday. So if anybody's...
And what time is that?
That's, I believe, 6:30.
6:30-ish.
6:30 to 8:30, I think, is the deal.
Good.
So yes, that's very exciting.
Yeah, that's nice. Cool. Are you playing by yourself, solo?
I am playing solo.
Okay.
Yep, one woman band.
We're going to hear a one woman band in just a moment too with Amy Rigby. Jen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So let's do this on a regular basis and stay in touch with what your programs are, and let's bring some kids in who are part of the programming, and
that's wonderful.
Talk about what's up, and we have to hope at some point talk about art programming.
Yes,
we'd love to be a part of that as well.
Yes, and I will very soon have contact information and all that wonderful stuff so people can reach out.
Okay, let's do the switch out. Thank you, Jen.
All right,
appreciate
thank
it.
You.
This is, it'll take a second. We'll do a live switch out from Jen Dubois, one-woman band, to Miss Amy Rigby, extraordinary woman band. Do you want to be there? We'll just do this. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Is your guitar out? Is it ready?
Oh, yeah. That's all ready to go.
Do you want to, let's start with a song.
Okay.
Are you ready to do that? Can you jump into it?
Sure, I can jump in.
Let's jump in with a song. I know. And while she's doing that, I'm going to tell you that Amy has a brand new record out, and it is fantastic. It's called The Old Guys. And I have been listening to it nonstop for weeks, and I am completely enthralled with it, especially the opening track. But we're going to talk about a bunch of things. Do you have a song in mind?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. What,
is it on this CD?
I'll play something that's on there.
And which tune is it?
I'll play one that you probably couldn't play on the air because it has a curse word in it.
Oh, good.
So I'll definitely.
We're adjusting mics here. Okay.
I'll deftly leave out that curse word. All right. Hope. Now that I've said I'm.
So that tune is.
Forget. It's called Back from Amarillo.
Oh, yes. I thought that was a good one for us.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's so delicate and sweet. Okay. Amy Rigby, Amarillo from her new CD, The Old Guys.
I'm just going to pop these headphones on. See how things are. Sound here. Oh, well.
Okay.
Forget
you
it.
Probably don't need the headphones, actually. Yeah, you can.
That's it.
You're good. All right, here we go.
I'm going to go raw. There are places that you hear of all your life, but never make a plan to get to. And I've been running out of time to do the things I want with too much stuff to get through. There are people who I love, I only see when I lie sleeping on my pillow. But I think that I can make it all work out when I get back from Amarillo. Got dirty laundry in my suitcase and a bad case of the 50-something. Feel like the whole world went and spun the other way. I just saw it on the news. I try to meditate and cogitate and contemplate the why and how and will. I expect I'll have the answer to it all when I get back from Amarillo. Coming to what brought me here. space to think. I hope that it's okay, I still drink. These places that you hear of all your life, some days you wake up and you're in one. They become forever part of who you are, except maybe for Cleveland. And you leave something behind, they'll never scrub away with elbow grease and Brillo. I'll be more of who I am when I get back from Amarillo. I expect I'll have the answer to it all when I get back from Amarillo.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. Part of what's so special to me about that song is it really your voice on it? It really, it's a great song for your voice. It reveals the tenderness in your work.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so sweet.
Thanks. Sometimes you write a song and you kind of have to like really push it out there. But
sure.
Some songs just like are kind of almost like if you could swallow the microphone, you would, to like just get it to be like just right. From inside.
Yeah. No, it's true, especially in your work. You have that range. Some songs are kind of screamers and others are more tender and quiet. But before we jump into further exploring some of those remarks, one of the qualities I like so much about the record is it feels to me like an honest presentation, a kind of reconciliation of what it's like to be alive now. Now, 2018. And having lived through decades of having hope, having big dreams, and really kind of coming to some kind of terms with that. I feel like that's what I'm taking from the album.
That's very nice. That's beautiful. Thank you.
And it feels very authentic to me. And I think that's why the album is so listenable over and over and over again, because it feels true. Do you feel that about this particular piece of work?
Yes, I guess I feel like, you know, I've made records for years, and I think hopefully have learned that, like, that's what I have to offer. That's, you know, that is that kind of honesty. I think, so, you know, maybe having reached a point where, you know, the chance of like having any sort of big commercial success is, you know, that's not really something that
it's not the main aspiration anymore. Right?
Not that it ever was, you know, like, yeah, if you grew up listening to pop radio,
right,
and listening to FM radio, you know, listening,
sure,
to hits play and popular, you know, it's popular music because, mm-hmm, a lot of people bought it. You know, I think you can't help but be sort of, you know, driven by that just, you know, idea of having something that you made, like playing,
right,
in everybody's living room or in everyone's car or whatever. But I guess, you know, as time goes on and you become more, you know, more, I don't want to say realistic, because if I was realistic, I would never do this in,
right,
the first place.
I don't think it's that. To me, it strikes me as a more healthy, balanced approach to being an artist.
Maybe that's it.
That you realize there's something more important. I mean, success is great, and having funding for projects, great. Well, I wish that for everybody, but that's not really the big goal. You're looking for a kind of engagement.
I guess that's
with yourself. And if you can reveal that, that's a big deal.
I think you're right. It's are you a therapist too?
No.
Because you just, yeah, that's just very...
Well, I've been thinking about this album a lot because it's touched me in a really special way. And I, in our PR, I sort of refer to it as a tribute album. Obviously, it's called The Old Guys. You've got a song. We're going to talk about the one from Philip Roth to R. Zimmerman in a second. But you've got, obviously, to Robert Altman, the great film director, and a very personal kind of lament to Bob. Which
yeah.
we'll find out about, I guess. And then my favorite song is the Philip Roth to R. Zimmerman, at least at this point. I'm sure that can change. It's such a great opening.
It is for the
whole CD.
It does kick it off.
It does. It kicks it off great. So let's talk about that. So this is a tribute that's basically kind of as if Philip Roth were writing the song to Bobby Dylan.
Right.
And saying, damn, you got there first. I should have the Nobel. Or not necessarily I should, but I respect that you got it. But sort of also, why haven't I gotten it?
Right. I really, really wish I'd gotten it. Yeah.
Yeah. And is that also true for you in some way in terms of what we were just talking about, success?
Well, I think, you know, it's great to play another character in a song, and it's something I haven't really done that much of, but I guess like being a fiction writer versus writing, you know, memoir, your own life goes into it too, and you see yourself in this character that you're portraying, and that all feeds in there, and mm-hmm. And so I think all of that comes from, you know, like, but in the persona of Philip Roth, which was really kind of great, you know, to be this other, like, just towering.
Yes. Literary giant.
Literary figure, you know, yeah. and be able to have these big feelings that a big author like that would have, you know, that mm-hmm. little me might not feel that comfortable having, and that just felt so mm-hmm.
so
free.
Was the song sparked by Dylan's getting the Nobel and then you were reflecting on it, or was it in
it
the other direction?
Honestly, I would not have written that song if it were not suggested to me. I was teaching at a songwriting workshop or songwriting retreat up in Michigan, and the guy who runs the retreat gave everyone a tailored assignment. And he knew I was a big Dylan fan. I think he knew I worked in a bookstore, you know, so he probably thought I liked to read. And it was, you know, the month of that they made the announcement. And, mm-hmm. and so it was, you know, very topical. But so my assignment was what went through Philip Roth's mind when
Dylan,
he learned that Dylan was getting the Nobel. And so, you know, I just happened to have a Dan Electro 12 string with me because I was touring and playing some other shows, and mm-hmm. and I was listening to a biography of Tom Petty, like on you know, in the car, like I would have been reading, but I was driving all the time, so I was listening to it. And so I was kind of channeling a little Tom Petty.
Yeah,
too.
It has. I think one of the things that Tom Petty did, correct me if I'm wrong, he had a way of using a rhythm guitar that was almost like a lead guitar in importance of the song. And you very carefully have adapted that to you. I don't sense it's like copying him anyway, but you've taken that and also enhanced some of your songs in the same manner. To me also, there's a lot of great bass in this CD.
Yeah, yeah, that's
it's
that's
like
my,
a really important part of it.
Reckless Eric,
this is
produced
Eric.
The album, and he and I have been playing together for years, and like 10 years now, and he played the bass, and his bass playing was a big part of our sound when we do our duo thing, mm-hmm. And so it really does complement, you know, like the kind of more like strummy guitar type, you know, those kind of
little... Well, it's very well balanced. He's also the engineer, right?
Yeah.
For these. So kudos to Reckless Eric. Good job.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, it's really, really well balanced. So let's just start with the idea of the old guys. You wanted to do a tribute album to those that have come before you or those that are your peers and say thank you. Where did this start?
It didn't really... I won't say that it started, you know, as a concept, but I wrote the song The Old Guys. I just had that phrase, The Old Guys, written down in my notebook, like, we're the old guys now, or we're becoming the old guys. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
well, I am, you're not. But I know the feeling.
But just that is the natural progression of things, is that, you know, if you can keep alive and keep going, that you will become the older generation. Mm-hmm. And so that I had that song, and then it just sort of like attracted other songs that kind of felt like...
Oh, that's interesting. So that's almost
like
kind
that
of a magnet.
Was the title. It felt like that was the title, like, pretty early on. And I think it was helpful to have some organizing principle, you know, when to put songs together.
So are all the songs on the CD from, I mean, written after? Or did you pull things from an earlier period as
there's
well?
There's a couple from... you know, longer ago. A lot of them were, you know, written in the last couple of years. Some written as soon as, like, you know, as recently as, you know, like a month before the record was finished. Wow. Or something.
Do you write in the studio? I know some musicians don't like to do that at all, and others are get there and they just start working and something comes out.
No, I couldn't. I mean, that would be a very rare. I like to have a song
and have it polished and everything ready.
Not even polished, but just like know what the melody is, know what the chords are, know what the lyrics are. Maybe I will change a couple lyrics, like in the studio, if there's a line that I don't really feel all that happy with. But usually when I write a song, it just all comes tumbling out at once, and I don't have to. I like on the Philip Roth song, I wrote the whole song in like 3 minutes, except the Spartacus part. And that I had to take a... I finished the song, but I was like, it needs some sort of like epic classical reference to be... Yeah. I don't know, but...
No, it just takes the song to another level of mysteriousness.
Yeah, that had to come just by like taking a walk and just kind of like looking... like for the word that was in the right rhythm, and then going like Spartacus. I'm not exactly sure. I, you know, remember Ben-Hur and, you know, like...
yeah, who was Spartacus? Yeah. What did he do? Yeah.
And he was like, you know, I felt like he was kind of a slave, or, you know, like I a Roman slave. Like I kind of remembered who, you know, like when you read a word that you kind of know what it means, but you're not 100% sure, and you kind of have the gist of it. Right. And sometimes it kind of is better that way, you know, to not like...
Sure, the ambiguity gives it.
Yeah. So that was like that one little...
It was a perfect touch to it. Can we play that, or can you do an all-acoustical version? I'd love to hear it if you don't mind.
That was, yeah.
All right. So this is from Philip Roth to R. Zimmerman. It's the opening song on Amy's new CD, The Old Guys.
Michigan Lodge, where I wrote the song, but I did write it on a 12 string. But okay. As you step out onto that Nobel stage, spare a thought for the man. Thank you.
That's so great. That's a great rendition.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, so, I'm here in a library, so. Yeah.
So let's also not forget to mention that you are going to be performing at Hilo this Friday.
It's actually tomorrow. Thursday.
Oh, it's Thursday. Okay, thank you. Good. Good dates. Okay.
Yes, we'll get to the right date. No, it's Thursday.
Thursday at June, 7.
Thursday, June 7.
Okay, Thursday. And are you going to play acoustic guitar solo? Are you going to have a band?
I'm just playing solo.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I've been touring solo. The first couple months when the record came out, I toured with the band, but the last month I've just been playing solo.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Thursday at Hilo, which is on Main Street in Catskill at 7 o'clock.
Is it 7 or... I was telling people 8, but maybe...
Well, is that, 7 or 8.
Do they usually start... Yeah.
I don't know. I thought I noticed it at 7
come
on the
in,
door
get
this
a drink
morning.
And a yeah, snack relax. And some popcorn. And
get ready. Yeah, we'll get cool. Ready. So how many records have you made?
I was in a couple bands before sure. I started having solo records and
career,
shows.
Yes.
So I got to work back because Eric and I made 3 together as Reckless Eric and Amy Rigby. And before that, I'd made 5 solo albums. And so this makes the 6th solo album. Okay. And then I had a group called The Shams, and we had an album on Matador in the early 90s. And then a band called Last Roundup, and we had an album on Rounder in the late 80s. So I wrote you know most of the Sham songs and a lot of the Last Roundup songs. Mm-hmm. And,
so what's your ritual for writing, or do you have a ritual? Do you like set aside a certain time every day? Do you try and practice every day? And how does that work for you?
Well, I used to write a lot of songs. I mean, I just used to write all the time. Then I started. Maybe, you know, after a while you like have so many songs, you know, that you kind of like to play. Maybe I just felt less compelled to just keep adding to that. Hmm. And my output of songwriting is much less now. I definitely don't like grab the guitar and write songs every day. I do a lot of writing. Like I write a blog and I've been working on a book that's for years. And so I've been doing a lot more of writing, you know, without music, without guitar, without which I think that, you know, the whole Philip Roth song came from that, just going like that is like really hard work. Playing mm-hmm. music is fun. Writing songs, you've got melody, you've got harmony, you've got so many things that can kind of help push the idea along, whereas just like putting words on a cold blank page is just, you know, you're creating, you're working from right. nothing.
And he used to work standing up, which is also interesting. He wrote standing
yeah,
up.
Yeah, standing
so
up.
I thought that was interesting. And so did Rilke. Rilke always, the German poet is uh-huh. referring to Rainer Maria Rilke, and he would travel. He was kind of nomadic and poor. So everywhere he went, he would have a local carpenter build the stand that he would,
that
you know, of course, this is way before computers. So this is the early 1900s. So he would stand and then pace mm-hmm. and write and pace. And I would imagine that's what Roth did a little bit, because why would you want to stand if you weren't pacing, right?
Right.
So you could kind of, you know, go back to it and easily leave it and walk and think.
And you stay slim.
Some of them did, didn't they? So there is no definitive sort of pattern in your life at this point in terms of writing music.
I like driving for writing.
Really?
Like get an idea and kind of, and just be on the open road and, you know, just.
And you make notes as you're.
Make notes or sing it into the phone or uh-huh. something like that. Very, you know, being very careful every moment, of
sure.
course. But even like pulling over to a rest area to like write something down if I feel uh-huh. like I really need to write and can't.
So you keep a journal?
I do, yeah. I have kept journals for, I hate to say it, back to, remember when that book, The Artist's Way, first came out?
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
I just like loved that book, and it really, you know, just like hooked me on.
So that was probably early 80s? Am I right in that? Or is it?
Or maybe more like the late 80s.
Late 80s, okay.
Or maybe it was the mid 80s. Yeah, somewhere in the 80s.
It had a big effect on a lot of people in terms of the creative process.
Yeah, that got me in the habit. I mean, I always did like write in notebooks and stuff, but that really got it to be a habit. Mm-hmm. And
and have kind of kept with that, not religiously, not like the three morning, you know, the morning pages three a day, you know, like
right.
I don't really do that anymore, but I do really like to write in the morning.
For you, is writing in a journal a way of listening to yourself in a different way?
I don't know. Maybe it just helps me figure things out, I guess. And then something about, you know, the act of like writing something down with a pen and paper, mm-hmm. An idea for like a little story or something, it can actually, well, number one, I can remember it, you know, like if I don't write it down, I probably won't remember
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of gets it rolling. And then I'll usually like switch over and type, you know, but. Mm-hmm.
So do most songs come as a lyric before the music?
Kind of, it always comes at the same time, unless it's just a phrase.
Unless you're on the road, driving.
You know, it usually comes in a kind of a pattern.
It comes together.
Like a rhythmic pattern anyway. It might not have exactly the melody, but, and then, yeah, or like a little bit of a germ of a title or a theme or, you know, like a line, like a first line. I lived in Nashville for a couple years and did a lot of co-writing and a lot of songwriting there. And a lot of times it would be like, oh, you'd get a great title and then you'd, you know, kind
flesh
of,
it out.
I think it can be fun and there's some good songs written that way, but I always kind of like to not really know what the title is till I finish the song.
Do you ever dream in music?
A dream?
Do you dream in music?
Yeah, the other day I dreamt this song and I did just like wake up and immediately write it down and record it just so that I would. And then I have to, like, I still haven't like Googled the title to see if it was, because I was dreaming it coming out of a radio, and so I still don't know. Like, I want to like finish it before I, maybe I'll be really disappointed when I find out, oh, that song already exists.
Oh yeah, the Hollies did it in 1967. Yeah. Oops.
Something really sad like that. Like, and here I thought I was, you had this, you know. Anyways, but yeah, I will dream sometimes But I think the hard thing is like waking yourself up and like actually getting it down.
Yeah.
It can, because you can always go like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll remember that. And you never do.
You never do. So this album, The Old Guys, kind of started with that song. And then it was sort of a magnet for the rest of the CD, right? Is that, as you look back at your other work, is that also characteristic of how CDs have come together?
It varies. Change? It really does vary. Sometimes it will feel like, you know, like my first solo album, Diary of a Mod Housewife, was very much felt like a concept album, and all the songs really related to, you know, being a mother, being a parent and a wife, and trying to have like a family and an artistic life too. But other ones have been, you know, more just kind of like, I need some songs. Do I have any songs? And, you know, which ones would be good? And and just kind of seeing what feels like something I want to record.
So I want to remind everybody, we're listening to WGXC, your creative community radio station, 90.7. And I'm in the studio with Amy Rigby. And we're talking about her new CD, The Old Guys. She will be performing this Thursday, we think, 7, maybe 8 o'clock at Hilo in downtown Catskill. So I have a sort of a bigger, almost abstract question, which I realize could be ridiculous, but I can't resist asking
like
it, okay?
I like those.
You can dismiss this one if you want. But where do you think a song comes from for you?
Well, I think, you know, from years of just loving songs and listening to the radio and records, and, you know, it's I feel like that's just sort of part of my makeup, you know, like I think in songs, I relate, you know, I relate to songs, I use them as markers of like time and, you know, where was I, you know, when I heard this particular song. So there, I guess, so it's almost like a seventh sense or something. Mm-hmm. It's
music and song is so integrated into your being that it's just a natural part of it.
Yeah.
To come out in a creative expression, that's who you are.
And it's a beautiful, like a mathematical equation, because it's a finite, you know, there's something very comfortable to me about that 3 minute, you know, you don't set out, and it doesn't have to be, a song could go on, you know, for practical and mechanical reasons, mm-hmm. you know, songs.
There's a framework for about 3 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And I really do just like think in those
parameters.
In that increment, and also in like a verse and a chorus and a kind of, and even, you know, a bridge is a certain sort of feeling that takes you somewhere else, and all these things. It's like the parts, you know, like what makes up a coat, or, you know, what makes up a table, you know, like the legs and the, you know, it's kind of like that with songs for me. So
there's also, in at least in this album, sense of place is very important. Emeril, you sang. Pittsburgh is mentioned.
Yeah.
Cleveland's kind of dissed in one little spot. So
I lived there briefly, so it wasn't just out of nowhere.
Okay. So place is important as well as people in your work. Do you think of it like that? And is that, I mean, where did Amarillo come from? Have you spent time there?
I was going to go and play a show there. This nice couple that I met up here, but who were from there, said, oh, you know, we really think our friends and, you know, the community of Amarillo would love to hear you. And so they kind of made that happen. And I was, it's quite a long way to go for just one show. And, you know, but just because of when it was, you know, the circumstances, it just like only made sense to go. It didn't make sense to connect it to like a longer tour, which would have made it kind of
cumbersome in some way. Yeah.
So I was just kind of looking at it as this project, and I was looking at all these songs with Amarillo in the title, and thinking it would be good if I had something like that to play when I was down there, because people would probably be wondering, like, what is she doing here? And, you know, so it would be like one way to just like connect.
Right.
But then I just ended up waking up in the morning, like before I was going to go, with this song kind of rolling through my head. And
how sweet.
And so just finished that.
Did you drive there or fly?
I flew. Oh. I flew, thank God. Yeah. It's really far away.
It'd be a long drive, yes. Right.
It's really far away. But so, it kind of felt like it's such a great word, Amarillo.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
I really loved the idea sweet. Of having it in a song of my own. But it kind of is a stand-in for so many places that, like, you, there's often these places you're like, what am I doing in, you know.
Yeah, that's life on the road,
Topeka,
right?
Or not that I don't think I've ever played in Topeka, but, you know, what am I doing in this place?
And right. So you're a big fan of Tom Petty.
Yeah.
And he has recently passed.
Yeah. It's not so recent now, even, but it kind of just, it does keep kind of occurring to me, like, wow, he's gone.
What did you learn from him and his work?
Well, you know, the good thing about Tom Petty for me is he wasn't sacred to me like Bob Dylan might be, you know, like you could kind of look at it in a really superficial way and just kind of get that surface enjoyment out of his records, and you know, saw him play a couple times, and you know, we weren't looking to him for the answers to anything, and so I think it was really that kind of effortlessness that you know, it just felt like, so I know it wasn't easy, I know it was a very hard one, all that he did, but it just felt, It was like a feeling of music that I like, and don't, you know, it where you're not taking it too seriously. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to reinvent the wheel. You're right. you're just kind of rock. It's that rock aspect of it, and the whole band and the, you know, just like all the instruments working together, and him just being a part of this greater thing. So mm-hmm. there's just like that humanity, I guess, about mm-hmm. him.
So I have a funny question for you. So if you got to put together your ideal band, anybody you want, what's the Amy Rigby band look like? Play with this. Who do you want in your band?
Oh, well, I want Reckless Eric for sure.
On bass?
On bass.
Okay.
Even if we double him with, you know, Tony Garnier from Bob Dylan's band playing the upright bass too.
Okay.
Just because I just love his playing and
yeah.
he's such a cool presence. And oh, I don't know. This is crazy.
I know it's a funny
I feel
one.
Like I'm on a late night drive, just trying to not fall asleep. So try, like, you know, coming up with some. Fanciful thing to just like keep the drive
okay,
going.
Okay, well, how about, is there someone you'd really like to sing with?
I'd love to have like Jerry Lee Lewis playing piano, you know, but I'd want to be on another piano. Like we'd be like, I don't want to be facing him. Like he'd be on a piano to one side of me and I'd be, yeah. Cause I would be like scared to look in his eyes, but I do love him and I love hearing him play the piano. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. So
I could go on for so long. This is going to be crowded stage.
I want you to pick a drummer. Who's the drummer you want to play with? Who do you want behind you?
Well, I, you know, speaking of the Heartbreakers, I really love Stan Lynch's playing. I thought he added so much to the architecture of the Heartbreakers. I don't know if he's like my all-time favorite drummer, but I think it would be really fun to play with him.
So, do you want to play another song?
Sure.
I think we have time for one more song. And
sure.
We could say goodbye. We have 2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes. Okay. I'll do a sort of a warm weather song that'll probably get me. It's not on the album. It's
okay.
Probably get me in trouble upstate here, but okay. Jesus did it, so I guess it's all right. But no matter how hard I try, I can't get used to it. And who am I to deny them their right? But if you ask me, there's really no excuse for it. Men in sandals. Look at the Romans, wait, I think I'd rather not. Came up with more stuff than you can shake a stick at. Their empire fell, but they gave us a lot. One thing remains I'd like to throw a brick at. Men in sandals. Men in sandals. Somebody really put their foot in it when they thought this kind of display was gonna be okay. We see the need for comfort and speed, but dear God, there's gotta be a better way. Than men in sandals. Imagine Hank Williams on the Opry stage. It pains me so to picture his toes freed up. If the Beatles came along in this enlightened age, they'd be lame like fish, can't kick ass and tevas. Men in sandals. Grandfathers, frat brothers, rich guys and hicks, finding new ways to make us suffer. Wear baggy shorts and throw some socks into the mix. Meanwhile, I'll pray for end of summer.